Dear Carl Gustav, after reading the work of Karl Popper, I was quite fascinated to find this particular line in one of your books. A myth is more individual and represents life more accurate than science, which operates with average concept does. These concepts are too general to do justice to the subjective multiformity of an individual life. As a matter of fact, Popper probably belongs to one of those who would fiercely oppose your work from a scientific point of view and point out that the science of falsification does not allow for myths. He would probably accuse you of panpsychism and give lengthy descriptions and explanations about the impact of the external third world, the superfluousness of a theory of emotional expression, and the dangers of a mythological approach towards a general idea of objective epistemology. On the surface, it would seem that you and Karl Popper are each other's absolute opponents, and that you have nothing in common except your nationality. Also, Karl Popper has a firm belief in the dominant existence and the influence of an outside world. He is a celebrated evolutionist, whilst your work seems to be characterized by the celebration of an internal world, and you are viewed as a naturalist. Beyond this opposition, which has been mostly constructed by the circumstances of time and the modernistic views of science concerning the growth of knowledge, there are other circumstances which link both you and Karl Popper in a sort of circumambulatio, dry-rolling through space. I must say that for a long time I was impressed by your work. In the atmosphere of the prevalent Marxist approach and the narrow-minded physicalist materialistic ideas that dominated cultural anthropology during the 70s, there were not many options. Anthropology had no view of individual actions, and earlier scientists like Margaret Mead and Ruth Benedict and Linton applied rather curious model of personalities that suggested a blueprint of cultural linked sets of ideals, creating psychological types rather than living people. Next to all this, there was an everlasting fight against positivism. Marxism did not rule positivism, but gave it a strong constructivist base for historically false or true consciousness of self, something which neither Popper was devoid of. My own fight with positivism consisted of a resistance towards the clear-cut ideas of reality. The ideas irritated me as they suggested objective criteria concerning the seen and the unseen, but more dominating the sensed and the unsensed, and even more oppressing of the Western sense of time, of the Western sense of the touchable, of the Western sense of communication and language, and last but not least, of the scientific outlaw of spirits, animism, telepathy, and predictive dreams. In all this, I found a gross underestimation of the world of others, both where cultures and individuals were concerned. I found these arrogant Western views smothering and oppressive. Did you know the anthropologist Claude Lévi-Strauss? He wrote two articles which showed an explanatory approach towards the phenomena of magic in non-Western cultures. These two articles, one named The Sorcerer and His Magic, the other named The Effectiveness of Symbol, enlightened me about the dark side of Western beliefs. In fact, it strengthened me in my view that Western science was intolerant towards whatever it could not see, hence prove or objectify. Even Lévi-Strauss, an anthropologist who should have known better, left in his wake a long line of heresies. To give a number of successive examples, first of all, in Western social science, the community and its social consensus is always stronger than the individual. In The Sorcerer and His Magic, Lévi-Strauss tells the tale of a competition between two individuals over a claim of sorcery. One person was abolished as a charlatan, and the demystification of his magic by the community supposedly drove him to madness. His adversary was called Quasalit, and according to Levi-Strauss, Quasalit did not become a great shaman because he cured patients. No, he cured his patients because he became a great shaman. Carried by society's consensus, of course, which in fact, in itself, according to Levi-Strauss, pointed towards a collective pole of the process. And although the term collective subconscious immediately springs to mind here, it reveals a rather condescending aspect of Western thinking. It reminded me that Western scientists look at other cultures with a tendency to view charismatic leadership as prominently present, while ignoring the scientific charisma of the West altogether. Secondly, the rational remains on top, always, and the emotional below, always. Even though Levi-Strauss does not exclude any society in his article, he does uphold the difference between scientific views and a non-scientific view. In a non-scientific view, he holds pathological and normal thought processes as complementary rather than opposed, and he concludes, "In a universe which strives to understand, but whose dynamics it cannot fully control, normal thought continually seeks the meaning of things, which refuse to reveal their significance. So-called pathological thought, on the other hand, overflows with emotional interpretations and overtones in order to supplement an otherwise deficient reality." Thirdly, a rather subconscious aspect of Western thought I found to be the visual, and its empirical performance as ever dominating. For normal thinking, there exists something which cannot be empirically verified and is therefore claimable. For pathological thinking, there exists experience without the object or something available. Fourth, in Western ideas, the rest of the senses are always inexpressible, as they seem to need to be transformed into order or physical processes, meaning or verbal expression, which in itself suggests the experience is not there unless it is verbally or visually expressed, or more specifically, it refers to a thing which can be ordered in a identifiable matrix. For instance, also in The Effectiveness of Symbol, Levi-Strauss states on the matter of a healing ritual, "It is the relationship between the symbol and the thing symbolized, or, to use the terminology of linguists, between the sign and the meaning. The shaman provides the sick woman with a language by means of which unexpressed and otherwise inexpressible psychic states can be immediately expressed. And it is this transition to verbal expression at the same time which induces the release of the physiological process, that is, the reorganization in a favorable direction of the process to which the sick woman is subjected." And I kept asking to myself, why would I oppose such a seemingly well-configured logical statement, which seems so inexhaustingly true? There seemed such undeniable attraction in connecting the body and the mind, as was the main contribution of structural anthropology in those days, and such a perfect system of opposition that seemed to cover the whole world. But then it struck me that Levi-Strauss ruled out any communication outside the physical thing, outside the symbol, outside the inexpressible, and, or, but more importantly, outside causality. I sensed something was wrong here, or, to put it differently, rather than knowing or seeing, I smelled a rat. What's more, My research among spiritists, clairvoyants, astrologers, card interpreters, magneticians and Afro-Surinam healers in the Netherlands forced me to a different direction, away from neatly configured causality. Their patients and clients, healthy or sick, cured or victimized, provided me with some answers. Of these, I will testify later, as I studied 80% of your work as part of my research. You must remember that university had taught me you and Levi Strauss were each other's opponents, and I had hoped to find some more empathic alternative to Levi Strauss's interpretation of what I came to call the physical thing. I still believed in Max Weber's concept of der verstehende Soziologie, and that the science of understanding the culture of the eternal other was a matter of hard work, open-mindedness and cultural relativism. It seemed dishonest to pose the sorcerer in the position of a juggler who obviously seemed to know all the tricks of linguistics but never really healed. Through your work, however, I came to realize that everybody healed, and this was equally true for Levi Strauss. Everybody but the patient. The symbolic structure was fictionalized. The collective subconscious was restored in its rightful place, and so was tradition. But the patient seemed rather passive, more as a subject to the structure, or as a strange instrument of the gods. Also, the patient always seemed to be in the position of a pupil, an eye, who received teachings from what you have called the self, but what seemed to consist mainly of representations of culture or symbols. It could neither account for the inexpressible. For some time I had my hopes set on synchronicity as an acausal principle. But the possibilities of your interpretation of synchronicity disappointed me soon after, as its sole purpose seemed to be to prove the patient wrong and the therapist right. I couldn't tell from your work what the position of the patient really was, other than Levi Strauss's sick woman, who was also pushed into a favorable direction. You called it synchronicity, but there was quite a purposeful causal relation in the process. Whether or not this was caused by two simultaneously happening events, the patient always needed to be convinced of something. In your work, synchronicity served as a justification of the truth of the message. In Levi Strauss's work, the language served as a justification of the favorable direction of the message. And I wonder, could it be a mere message in a bottle? Could it be that this message is more important to the two of you than the patient? Can we ever know the answer? Is learning to communicate in accordance with the rules of the collective unconscious or the symbolic structure something that makes people happy? Or is it a more or less safe way to be left in peace with oneself by meeting the dominant image with an equal authority? For what it is all worth as a fact, double-blind research done in the 60s towards the results of psychotherapy shows that, among other, people in therapy take longer time to heal than people on the waiting list for the therapist, who never get to see him and somehow heal anyway. I decided to pay special attention to the tension that existed between the items from Levi Strauss' interpretation of the healing process. And here they are, these strange creatures of defeat. The physical thing, the symbol, the inexpressible, and the causal. And with that in mind, I set out to gaze at the battle of form and content, internal and external, cause and effect, it and its individuation.